12:02. Will please come to order. I'd ask that you all rise and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you'd call the roll, please.
Ms. Beckley, here. Ms. Crane?
Here.
Ms. Danner?
Here.
Mr. Ditto?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Stone?
Here.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Botello?
Here.
You have a quorum.
That brings us first on our agenda tonight with a special order of business. Every once in a while, actually, I think, with some frequency, we have the opportunity to honor some fellow citizen for distinguished service, and that is certainly the order of this evening. I have a proclamation that I'd like to read. Whereas Beatrice Aquino Abella was born and raised in Juneau, Alaska, performing with the Juneau Children's Peace Choir when she was just 6 years old. From there, she advanced to the Alaska Youth Choir and Juneau Student Symphony. She is a 2008 graduate of Juneau Douglas High School. And whereas Miss Abella is a mezzo-soprano, began attending Southern Oregon University, where she became the only female freshman accepted into the SOU Chamber Choir and included on the tour of Germany and the Czech Republic. And whereas, by the close of her freshman year, she had earned the Outstanding Music Freshman Award, the E. Mulling Music Scholarship, the Leon Mulling Music Scholarship, and the Diversity Scholarship. And whereas during her sophomore year, she was the first SOU student in 25 years to be cast in a role for an Oregon Cabaret Theater production. She also participated in the Brava Opera Theater, the Jim Collier Young Artist Program, the Lyric Opera Northwest Musical Theater, and opera workshops. And whereas in April 2011, she was the only vocalist ever to receive the Grand Winner Prize for the National Young Musician Showcase Competition and performed in the winner's recital at Carnegie Hall. In December of 2011, she again performed at Carnegie Hall, this time as a first prize winner of the American Protégé International Music Talent Competition. She and her duet partner were awarded the Best Performance Award in that competition. And whereas most recently, Beatrice serenaded the residents and their guests at the Juneau Pioneers Home on December 30th, 2011, in a generous performance to give back something to her community by sharing her vocal talents with her hometown seniors. And whereas Beatrice will be headed to Guanajuato, Mexico, in answer to an invitation by the Division of Architecture, Fine Arts, and Design of the University of Guanajuato in recognition of her outstanding accomplishments as a vocalist and a student. Now, therefore, I, Bruce Botello, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby recognize Beatrice Aquino Abella for her commitment to excellence on and off the stage, and encourage the community to acknowledge her amazing accomplishments. We wish her continued success. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau to be affixed this 30th day of January 2012. Trixie is not here tonight, but her parents are. I'd ask that Rinaldo and Teresa, if you'd be willing to come forward so that we can present this on behalf of a grateful city to a very talented daughter, and actually, you should know, very talented parents as well. That brings us next on our agenda to the minutes of the January 9th, 2012, regular meeting 2012-01. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, is there objection to their adoption? Hearing none, so ordered. Mr. Manager, any agenda changes?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
That brings us next to public participation on non-agenda items. Any member of the public may ask that, that at this time may speak to the Assembly on an item not appearing on the agenda, and we limit the total time to 20 minutes. However, no person may speak for more than five. And as I right now look at those who have signed to testify, I believe the only person asking to testify on a non-agenda item is Jenny Del Rosario.
Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, everybody. I'm here as a citizen and at the same time as a member of the Lions Club, the Juno Lions Club. And I'm here to invite, in behalf of the Juno Lions Club, to invite you to join us in supporting the longstanding basketball competition sportsmanship with our southeastern communities. And this will be held in March 18 to the 24th of this year. That's the first agenda. The second one is, we would like you to support the first option that we have to keep the spring break for next year, because there's an action regarding the school district that they have to change the calendar for next year of not having a spring break. And the 67th gold medal would be in jeopardy. So as a citizen, I'm urging everybody to support to keep the spring break, to keep the longstanding legacy of the gold medal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Del Rosario. Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. And just for members of the public, at this point in our meeting, when citizens come forward with requests or raise issues, we generally will not address them until the end of the meeting. And so don't take any non-response right now as anything other than our respect for the rules of procedure here. That brings us next to the consent agenda. And here, any member of the public may ask that any matter on that consent agenda other than an ordinance for introduction be withdrawn so public testimony may be taken on that matter. Is there any member of the public who wishes to have an item on the consent agenda removed for consideration? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to ordinances for public hearing. Madam Clerk. We have actually before us first ordinance 2012-01. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the land use code relating to development near Eagle Nest.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would repeal the land use code restriction on development of property in the vicinity of Eagle's Nest. Consistent with past practice, the City and Borough of Juneau has deferred to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding conditions necessary to provide protection of bald eagles and their nests. Bald eagles were delisted as an endangered species in 2007, and the prescriptive conditions previously required by the Fish and Wildlife Service have been relaxed. This revision acknowledges the change in status and our past practice of deferring to the federal agency responsible for the protection of bald eagles. The Planning Commission did recommend unanimously against adoption of this ordinance. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
We now take public testimony, and I will begin with Mr. Jeff Sauer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. My name is Jeff Sauer. I am the Vice President of Juneau Audubon. Juneau Audubon have submitted comments to the Planning Commission last Thursday and has submitted comments to you tonight. I'm assuming that those are in your packet. There should be two letters there, and I won't read those letters to you, but I do have some additional comments. What I'd like to testify to about tonight is first about process and then about substance. First, as to the process, I think there's a legitimate question that should be before you tonight, which is, why is this issue before the Borough Assembly tonight? Last Thursday, many of us in the back of this room were in front of the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission expressed concern on a number of things. First of all, that there was no Title 49 review of this ordinance. This ordinance is in Title 49. They thought it should be reviewed by the Title 49 committee. Secondly, there was talk in the commission about an upcoming update to the comprehensive plan. Again, this proposal, this ordinance being proposed to you, was not being submitted to that body either. So those two entities were not receiving this. The Planning Commission then indicated concern that the Borough Assembly would not have their minutes, that the record from the Planning Commission could not get to you in time because of the short notice, the short time frame that had been set on from the Planning Commission to the Borough, and in fact that this was in front of the Borough just a few days after the Planning Commission was asked to make a recommendation. So you really don't even have the details of what their recommendation were. What I took from that and what Juno Audubon takes from that is that this is a very flawed process. And one is left with the question, what is the emergency here? Or as in the law, I've been a lawyer here for 30 years, what we talk about exigent circumstances. No one has presented any exigent circumstances in the Planning Commission, where we all were last week, as to why this process went the way it is going. And we strongly object to that. And I think the Planning Commission, I don't mean to speak for them, except, again, I don't know that you have their record. But as you know, the Planning Commission voted unanimously to not eliminate the Bald Eagle proposal. That is the process. As to substance, there's a number of issues, and I've outlined those issues in two letters. One letter to the Planning Commission, one letter to you. There has been a change in Fish and Wildlife, and there's been an argument before the Planning Commission from the city that the city has no eagle biologist and has no expertise in this area. We would suggest a number of that should not carry the day for any number of reasons. First of all, there's a number of options that the borough has as to expertise in this area. First of all, you have a very well-trained staff in the community development department that has been dealing with this issue for over 10 years. There's a big body of knowledge there. I'm not sure that they even need much more expertise from Eagle experts to deal as they have dealt with this for 10 years. Secondly, there's two bodies of information in front of the borough that the borough staff have to use on this issue in the future. First of all, there's Fish and Wildlife Federal Bald Eagle Nest Guidelines. Those have a lot of details that have been used and will be used. Secondly, as I indicated, there's 10 years of dealing with this by the borough, which includes 10 years of variances in the conditions that have been put onto those variances by community development. Those conditions, there's a record of those, and I would suggest that record really is to the extent of semi-standards that are out there that the borough uses pretty much time in and time out on these variants, on setting conditions. Secondly, it is true that Fish and Wildlife apparently, well, I shouldn't say it's true. It's my understanding that Fish and Wildlife has indicated that they can't participate with the borough to the level that they've done in the past. And there's something about that they may have provided comments to variances in the past. I would suggest that that's no longer needed, not with the body of knowledge and the information that the borough has on that. I think there's other options for the Planning Commission and for this body to explore if you really think more expertise is needed. And that is, first of all, I don't think it's ever been said that Fish and Wildlife will not participate at all in this process. They very well may informally assist your staff. And again, as I've said before, I don't think your staff really needs any help, not with the expertise that they have. Secondly, there's at least two Fish and Wildlife Eagle experts that are retired and in Juneau. Mike Jacobson and Phil Schempf have both retired. I think Phil Schempf recently retired from the service. Has anybody asked them if they would be willing to consult with the city staff? I would suggest that they very well might, and especially at a nominal fee. But all of this goes to the point of why in the world is this before this body tonight when none of these issues have been addressed? None of them. A couple other points. The community development memorandum in support of this, and let me just back up. Back at the Planning Commission, one of the things that struck the commission and struck me and why I raised the question is why the process here is not one person or entity testified in favor of the elimination of the Bald Eagle ordinance or provided comments. The only voice for this ordinance, eliminating the Bald Eagle ordinance, was the city itself. In that memorandum supporting that suggestion, it indicated that the current code provision not allowing development near Eagle Nest is too restrictive. Juno Audubon suggests that it does not logically follow that if the code is presently too restrictive, that the solution to it, that the solution is to eliminate it. Logically, what follows if the ordinance is too restrictive, then it should be modified so that it is no longer too restrictive. Obviously, a review of the ordinance towards changing it would be the logical approach. And again, this all goes to the issue of why is this before you, and all leads to the facts of the Planning Commission unanimously saying no to eliminating the Borough Eagle ordinance. One of the important things here that everybody needs to understand is that this is not duplicitous. This is not just a duplication of the Fish and Wildlife permit system and Fish and Wildlife laws. In fact, it's complementary. And in fact, as I've indicated on part number five of my letter to the Planning Commission, Juno Audubon's letter to the Planning Commission, there are many instances where the Borough Eagle ordinance is it. It, in many small cases, will be the only control that there is over development around Eagle Nest. And the reason for this is the federal Fish and Wildlife permit is an Eagle Nest and Eagle Take permit. And what the federal law says is you're not allowed to kill eagles, okay? That's a given. Or the proper terminology is you're not allowed to take an eagle, okay? And what that permit does is it costs $500 first. It's not mandatory. Nobody has to apply and get that permit. What the permit does is it gives the permittee a certain level of immunity if they follow the conditions of the permit and then happen to kill an eagle or take, okay? But there's nothing mandatory about it. It costs $500, and for small developers and for citizens, they simply won't apply. They won't spend $500 on a permit when they don't have to. You know what that leaves? That leaves no federal involvement. That leaves the borough ordinance as it in many, many small cases. So when you take this down to its logical extension, the problem becomes something like a citizen or small developer wanting to completely clear-cut, let's say, a large lot, all the way up to and around an eagle nest. In that situation, if this ordinance is eliminated, there will be absolutely no control. On the other hand, as it stands right now, the borough would at least have some minimal control. And I would suggest that what the borough has done over the course of 10 years is provided reasonable conditions to control small development around – to control development, especially as important in small cases. So really, the Eagle Ordinance is it in many, many cases. That's why this is important. That's why you shouldn't be eliminating this ordinance. That's why I would suggest, at least in part, why the Planning Commission did not vote to eliminate this ordinance. The Eagle Ordinance is beneficial to this community. It has worked in the past. There is a history of it. We know what it is. And in many cases, it's the only control of development close to Eagle Nest that will take place in certain small cases. There's one other point I wanted to make. That's all I would have. All right, thank you.
If you'd wait, Mr. Sauer, there may certainly be questions here. Are there any questions from assembly members? No. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next is Ms. Mary Lou King.
I am Mary Lou King, and I just have a few things I would like to say. I don't think that I think we should keep the ordinance. And I am one of the persons who voted for statehood. And I thought the reason that we were voting to have statehood was that we would have more control over what happens around us on the things that we care about. And it was the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Washington, D.C. who's making these decisions about how we deal with eagles. And I think we should deal with giving eagles some protection. The other thing I wanted to say is that eagles can learn to deal with human beings' usual noises. And I know this has already been decided and the permit has been given, but eagles sitting on a nest and eggs can't deal with blasting. And I think that even thinking about the permit that DOT has out the road to blast ought to be given some more consideration. I think the people of Juneau, or at least I, really like to have eagles around, and I think they're exciting, and I think our tourists who come here really enjoy seeing the eagles. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. King. Again, are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next is Ms. Tina Brown.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this important issue. I'm Tina Brown. I live out the road. I'm representing the Alaska Wildlife Alliance and myself with these comments. We believe that bald eagles should continue to have protections that the city and borough of Juneau has successfully afforded them for many years. As you know, they were recently removed from the endangered species list, and this is why U.S. Fish and Wildlife has relaxed protection of these birds. I want to stress that eliminating this ordinance does not make good biological sense. Many people don't realize how important eagle trees are. Nesting bald eagles are highly territorial, and good nesting trees are not common. As a result, a nesting pair usually defends the site year-round and seldom ventures far from the site. If the pair is disturbed, especially during early part of nesting, the eagles will probably not go elsewhere to build a nest. Even if they were to try to relocate, they would probably be driven away by another territorial pair of eagles. Eagle trees are important. Last year, the Fish and Wildlife Service captured and put a radio tag on a nesting eagle on one of the islands in the Mendenhall wetlands. On one of the sand islands. This was a control for the nesting pair on airport property, you probably remember. Although they had a nest built and had been successful at raising chicks in the previous 2 years, they abandoned their efforts that year. It's likely they did so because of disturbance. In this book, Southeast Alaska's Natural World, by Bob Armstrong and Marge Hermans, there's an article called Raising an Eaglet. This article was based partly on the work by Scott Jend, who at the time was an ecologist with the Pacific Northwest Research Station in Juneau. He climbed and monitored over 100 eagle nests in the Juneau area. His work indicated that once eaglets hatched, their parents were usually successful at raising them to leave the nest as fledglings. But among the nests that failed to produce fledglings, 95% failed during the incubation period. That is why we suggest that there be careful control during nesting periods, especially between April and May, which is typically the incubation period for eagles. In truth, any blasting, any construction from April through mid-August would be disruptive and harmful. In that book, they state that raising young eaglets and preparing them is a tremendous investment for bald eagle parents. It means about 6 months of hard work and staying almost constantly within a limited nesting territory. In the bald eagle, Stallmaster estimates that perhaps half of all fledglings fall to the ground after their first flight. Some studies found that most stay within a mile of the nest for 6 to 8 weeks, and some eaglets return to the nest to pick up food that their parents had cached. Mr. Armstrong and Ms. Hermans include a timeline for raising an eaglet. You're welcome to see it if you'd care to look at this book. The Audubon Field Guide to the Bald Eagle states that sometimes it's best to leave bald eagles alone. It stresses that they need a high degree of isolation from people to effectively perform functions of feeding and breeding. Eagles that are building nests, incubating eggs, and rearing their young are strongly deterred by human activity. And as Ms. King expressed, maybe they can get accustomed to us just being around, but a lot of activity, no. If people approach too near a bald eagle nest, the parents may abandon their eggs, or after the eggs hatch, refrain from feeding or warming the nestlings. This ordinance affects eagles throughout the city and borough of Juneau. This is an area almost the size of the states of Delaware and Rhode Island combined. That's huge. That's what's under your control tonight. And this ordinance affects generations of eagles. I also want to stress that passing this ordinance would create unacceptable uncertainty. It relinquishes CBJ's authority to others. This can have unintended consequences now and through the future. This would not be in the best interests of our community. We should not give up our authority on and control of this issue. If it's not passed, then variances can still be issued, just as they have been successfully for years. The ordinance permits practices that have not been attempted before. The quality of eagle monitors used in projects is in question because no standards have been set for eagle monitors, and CBJ would not be the ones hiring them. CBJ will have lost control over this if this ordinance is passed. The type of blasting that would be used in projects is not known. It would be left up to others, and CBJ would not have any control of this aspect of eagle protection. The types of heavy equipment being used in projects is not known. CBJ would have lost control over this in regards to eagle protection. It's not known how many eagles this would affect. Bonds and penalties do not prevent damage. They punish damage. Dead is dead. Tonight, I believe you have before you seven public testimonies. There are more after me. Two of those testimonies represent strong conservation organizations, which have a number of people in their membership. I don't know how many people have sent in written testimony to you. It's in your packet, but I know you have some. This represents a large portion of our community. We urge you to allow the Planning Commission to continue to do its job. Retain the authority to judge each situation on a case-by-case basis. That's what they're there for. And they're there to advise you, of course. We urge you to do the right thing for our wildlife and for all of those who value it by voting against this ordinance. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak before you, and I deeply appreciate your service to our community.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Are there any questions? Again, thank you for your testimony. Next is Mr. Greg Brown, and as Mr. Brown is coming forward, I note that there are a couple people here signed up to talk about the commercial passenger vehicle ordinance, and again, just to make clear, that was on our consent agenda. We don't take testimony in ordinances at the point of introduction, and it will be taken up for public hearing at our next regular meeting, which will be on the 13th of February. With that, Mr. Brown.
Okay, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Greg Brown. I live out the north end of Tea Harbor, and I have a company called Weather Permitting Alaska, which is the high-end wildlife viewing company in Juneau. National Geographic's on our boat. PBS is on the boat. We filmed a movie or a television show for the European Union off the boat last year, and our trips can range anywhere from a minimum of about $900 to $20,000, and those are trips that are booked for this year. When you live in Juneau, it's really easy to take wildlife viewing for granted. It truly is. But when you look at the value of things like whales, which we've done quite a bit of work on, a whale, one whale over the life of that whale in the city of Juneau is worth $32 million. Big number. And that number is accepted by UAS, by NOAA, and even the Juneau Economic Development Council will give you the same number. If we look at bears to the city of Juneau, and not talking about bears at Mendenhall, talking about bears at Pack Creek, Windfall, and those areas, it's worth $132,000, one bear, every season. And you put the sales tax number on top of this. These are real numbers. Wolves in Yellowstone. The government worked there. Said after they reintroduced wolves in Yellowstone, they picked up $35 million in incremental revenue in Yellowstone Park. We're working on the number for eagles right now. We've done a little bit of work on it. It looks like it's going to be about $20,000, $25,000, but that one's number is not refined yet. In our company, because we are a very high-end company and very personalized, we have the opportunity. We're usually with 12 people, ranging anywhere from 3 hours, ranging from 4 hours to 2 weeks. And I have 15 questions I ask these people. So basically, I have almost 200 focus groups a year. And over the period of that time, we ask these questions, and that's how I run my company. If you ask them what wildlife they came to see, they'll tell you whales, bears, eagles, and wolves. 78% of them will tell you in exactly that order. So eagles are important. They're actually ahead of wolves, which actually surprises me, but it's true. The point of this testimony is that wildlife viewing is worth a lot of money to the city of Juneau. It's worth a lot of money to people like me. It's worth a lot of money to the city in revenue and sales tax. This ordinance, we'd lose control of that. So I'm urging you to keep this ordinance in place. If we need to make a variance here or there, we'll make it. You're welcome to do that. But please do not lose control of this revenue stream. I think that would be a major mistake for the city of Juneau, for people like myself to run businesses, and also for the city of Juneau as far as sales tax and revenue into their coffers. With that, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Are there any questions? Again, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, Ms. Carla Hart.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I believe that Juneau has a wealth of eagles, and while I appreciate the economic values, having worked in wildlife viewing for the Department of Fish and Game, I'm talking about the community wealth of people who stop and look at eagles all the time, who appreciate the eagles and who have eagles as part of the core value of our community. I'm asking the Assembly to vote no on repealing the eagle protection, to listen to the Planning Commission, to listen to the comprehensive plan which was developed with public input, and to listen to the citizens who are here before you and have spoken to you in the community, I expect. Removing eagle protection for expediency of development of roads and other projects is contrary to our community values as expressed in the comprehensive plan. There are solutions to the lack of expertise, and I suggest that the Assembly vote no on this resolution and then task the administration with crafting solutions that protect the eagles and address the concerns of the lack of expertise available to help with the planning. And I support the really in-depth testimony you've also had, but I won't repeat it.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Again, any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next, Ms. Julie Kohler.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I'm urging you to keep the ordinance that has protected Juneau's bald eagles for so long and has likely contributed to Juneau having such a large bald eagle population. This great number of eagles helps make Juneau a fantastic place to live. After all, where else can you be playing soccer or baseball and have eagles flying overhead to check out what you're doing? Juneau's Eagle Nest Protection Ordinance, along with the previous protections afforded by the Endangered Species Act, are a wonderful success story. However, I fear that getting rid of Juneau's ordinance will have the long-term effect of reducing the number of bald eagles in the Juneau city and borough because of road building and other construction, not only now, but in the future. Removing the ordinance is akin to the person who is healthy only because she is on a certain medication deciding to stop the medication because she is healthy. Removing the ordinance so blasting and building can go on with little oversight will affect more than just bald eagles, because living in every one of those setbacks are small mammals and the songbirds we all enjoy, the warblers, the thrushes, the chickadees, to name a few. Removing the ordinance will impact 2 eagles per nest and is likely taking, on average, 1 eaglet. For songbirds, it is the taking of a multitude of chicks. These effects and takings will happen not just this year, but every year from now on. Again, I urge you to vote no in removing the ordinance. I urge you to keep Juneau's abundant bald eagles just that, abundant. This abundance is what helps to provide such a high quality of life to Juneau residents like me and to my friends that come to visit and can't stop saying, "Wow, look, there's an eagle," about 500 times a day.
Thank you, Ms. Kohler. Again, any questions? Thank you for your testimony. And finally, Mr. Bart Kohler.
Good evening. My name is Bart Kohler. I live out by Mountainside, Twin Lakes area. It's rare I get to speak before the City Assembly. I normally have spent most of my last 4 decades of life speaking before members of Congress or the U.S. Senate, so this is certainly, you have a better backdrop than looking in the Capitol building through some smog or something like that. So I have no prepared notes. I just came to listen and was, as part of our democratic way of life and ability of freedom of speech and our good old American flag there, signed up to speak before you. And the interesting thing about the American flag, I don't see the eagle on top of the pole there, but it should be because it is our nation's symbol, even though Benjamin Franklin wouldn't agree with that. Just a couple quick things I'm thinking about here. The fact that the Planning Commission was unanimous in opposition to this resolution, I think, is very compelling. And I haven't seen or heard anyone from the Planning Commission come up before you tonight and explain why they made that decision. And if I were in your position as an elected official, I would like to know why. Because it sounds to me that variances have been granted, they will be granted in the future, that to use the old Western phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, that might be the best way to go. I think looking at the last page of this ordinance, when you talk about 330 feet of an eagle nest on public land, formerly protected and with a long black line going across it, it's one thing with private property and a bald eagle's nest. It's another thing when we're talking about our public land and our national forests. And that land belongs to every one of us in this room. And eagles have a special place in the minds and hearts of American citizens. And I just support all the compelling testimony that's gone before you. I look out my window every day and am blessed to be able to see bald eagles flying around. I played softball in Cope Park and almost lost a ball in the outfield because I was looking up at a bald eagle flying across. And the ball almost hit me in the head, or fortunately I recovered and caught it. But to be able to tell people who don't live in Alaska and aren't lucky enough to live in Alaska and aren't lucky enough to ever come to Alaska, that sometimes you get so distracted in a softball game that you sort of lose track because of all the bald eagles in Cope Park. It's pretty amazing to have that here. And I hope you keep that aspect of Juneau alive and well and vote no against this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler. Again, any question? Let me ask if there's any member of the public who has not otherwise addressed us on this topic who wishes to do so. Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move assembly approval of ordinance 2012-12.
Discussion. Mr. Keel? Or Mr. Wanamaker, did you wish to address it first?
Yes, I do.
Please.
Thank you. I thank everybody for their comments. Their change is difficult. The federal agency that has a primary responsibility for the Endangered Species Act has determined that these protections are really not necessary anymore. And that worries some people. But if, for any reason, the eagle or any other species becomes endangered or needs to be protected in any way, shape, or form, they are there. They're the experts. They will make the recommendations. They still have oversight. And when the state and federal agencies of public lands, the managers of public lands, plan projects, they will come with their own recommendations as to what environmental and biological safeguards need to be in part of the plan, and they're very accepting of conditions that are reasonable and necessary that they may have not fully thought out. So I'm not worried about the eagle being endangered through the lack of participation in this 330-foot zone by the city and borough. Alaska is a vast state and the eagles are virtually everywhere. And we have federal policy, federal guidelines, and the city should be consistent with federal guidelines. They are the experts and they will advise us if we need to think of something, as will the state agencies. So I think that it's a reasonable solution and we just need to accept the fact that change does happen and sometimes it's not the change that we want, but it's there, and it's good public policy to be consistent with federal intent. If you can convince the federal government to do anything, it's a major accomplishment. Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm also particularly glad that the bald eagle is no longer endangered. But it's my understanding that the bald eagle in Alaska was never endangered. I'm interested that the change from not endangered to not endangered is prompting a proposal to change the ordinance, because it's obviously not a change. So I wonder if I could pose just a couple of historical questions. Can anyone answer when this ordinance was adopted, or these ordinances, these rules were adopted into the CBJ code historically, when that was?
Mr. Hart?
I'm sorry, I don't know right off. I could find it out for you, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
Okay. It's my understanding they've been here for quite some time. And I guess absent the detailed knowledge of when they were adopted, it'd be difficult to talk specifically about why they were adopted. But I think we have some limited insight into why and how some of the eagle protections we have been implemented, because they're, as I understand it, they're referred to in some of our planning documents. And I wonder, I see Mr. Pernula in the audience, I wonder if there's somebody who could talk about what the community values were that had those things put in our plan?
Mr. Swope, may we call on
sure.
Mr. Pernula?
On the first question, I looked at the Title 49 going back to 1987. That's when it had its last major update, and it was in the 1987 code, so it's been there since then. I also looked at the 1996 comprehensive plan, and there was a section dealing with bald eagles at that time. It was similar to the section that I quote in the staff report that I believe you people have a copy of. The one portion about amending the code was not in the 96 copy of the comprehensive plan, but most of the other policies have been there since at least 1996.
Okay. I guess what was remarkable to me is that there's nothing that I saw in the comp plan about the pending extinction of the bald eagle or its elimination from Juneau, right?
That's correct. Once again, we are not on the staff eagle experts. Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. And I, you know, it was all right. It was a facetious question. I'm making a point. There's been some conversation I know about the lack of biologists or eagle experts on the CBJ staff. And I know that Mr. Sauer referred to that a number of times in his comments. It's my understanding that we also don't have any habitat biologists dealing with some of our wetlands, on staff dealing with wetlands issues, or fish biologists talking about our stream setbacks, or hydrologists talking about sedimentation issues. I mean, we don't have any of those people on CBJ staff either, right?
Well, we do have a wetland review board that mm-hmm. has expertise in wetlands matters. Mm-hmm. And we also had experts in wetlands prepare our wetland management plan. So we have experts working on it, people trained in implementing those portions of the plan. And we've been trained in dealing with some of the things like streamside setback measurements, things like that. We have some training.
Mm-hmm. And the direction I guess I'm driving with that is that we don't have the streamside setbacks because we're worried about the extinction of salmon or other water creatures in Juneau either, right? They serve some community purpose beyond that. And so I think that what we heard in public testimony tonight was really not about biology. It was really about community value. And so I guess I share some interest in making, if necessary, the ordinances more flexible. although certainly I'm aware that the Planning Commission has granted, I don't know the technical term, but exceptions to these ordinances as written. But I'm not sure that past CBJ practice has required us to have biologists on staff when we look at something that has a biological element, because CBJ is really, in our land use and planning processes and permitting processes, looking more and more often at the community value element. And so I'm inclined to keep these ordinances on the books for now and encourage the Planning Commission and other appropriate agencies to see if we can find a way to make them more flexible if that's a need.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Earlier you had asked for any further comments from the public, and I see that we do have the chairman of the Planning Commission with us, Mr. Satry, and I wonder if it might be appropriate to have a little bit more background on the context of the Planning Commission's action last week, and what's the wish of the body?
Mr. Satry, are you willing to come forward?
Absolutely.
Mr. Pernula, perhaps you can just move over one here. I think you're going to be on the hot seat for a little while here.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Satry, for your willingness to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. I'm here tonight as the current chair of the Planning Commission. We had a long discussion about this item this past week, and I'd like to provide some context to our decision. Yes, as mentioned by the public, it was a unanimous decision, but how we got to that unanimous decision was quite interesting. I dare say there was 9 different opinions on the board that night as to in terms of getting to a no vote or a lack of recommendation for this.
Mr. Satry, I'll also interject for the public. All members of the Assembly did receive a copy of the minutes for that portion of the meeting, and so we are somewhat aware of the trying to read the tea leaves in your body.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I will try and be brief then. As has been mentioned before, when we've dealt with variances to the Eagle's Nest Ordinance in the past, we have completely relied on the recommendations of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Even an item as contentious as the Juneau Access Road, the first phase of it, which the Planning Commission at the time denied, said it wasn't in concordance with the city's comprehensive plan. We actually approved the variances, the Eagle's Nest, Eagle's Tree variances for that project because of the recommendation from the Fish and Wildlife Service. We know that, or it has been communicated to us, that that sort of input from that agency might not be as forthcoming or as easily obtainable as it has been in the past. And certainly that came to light during the latest variances we issued for the DOT road expansion project. I think that's certainly why this ordinance was introduced. There was some questions on the commission in terms of process. What was the need to move so quickly? Certainly some of the same comments that were brought up by the public. There were some questions about well, the Planning Commission sometimes gets very possessive about Title 49 because that's our body of laws that we work with, and we wondered why we weren't able to vet this through our Title 49 committee and then come back with recommendations to the Planning Commission, ultimately to the Assembly. But in the end, during our discussion, I think there was 4 different opinions within the commission at the time. There was some who wanted to accept the ordinance as written. There was others who would have liked to amend the ordinance to create a tiered structure for CBJ, state, federal, and private lands. There was certainly some who wanted to follow the advice of the comprehensive plan and to create a rationalized variance standard per its recommendations, and I believe that that recommendation is in the notice of decision you have in your packets. And there were certainly voices on the commission that did not want to accept any changes to the ordinance and continue the current practice of regulating through the variance procedures. So a unanimous vote, but not very simple. I think there was a lot of voices there that realized that the recommendations that we put in the comp plan to rationalize the variances, variance criteria for these issues to allow balanced development in areas that the city and its residents might contain some items or you know animals of value like the eagles. We need to do something to move that forward. If the assembly tonight decides to not move forward per the Planning Commission recommendation, I think we stand ready to have it remanded back to us to work it through our Title 49 committee, where we can come to some agreement as to how to move forward, whether it's simply on the variance criteria or amending the ordinance that was proposed to us. We do have a lot on our plate at our time. We would try and make this a priority to work through our committee structure through the public hearing process and back up for your consideration. And with that, I think I've summarized our discussion, and I'm open to any questions or comments you might have.
Let me return to Mr. Smith.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Further questions, Mr. Dibdahl, followed by Ms. Dan.
Thank you. And maybe this is for Dale or someone else to answer, but can you cite how many variances have been granted, say, in the last 5 years, and what types of conditions were put on the developer, whether private or public, and do you have any idea what those conditions cost?
First of all, on the numbers, we did a query of our database since we've had electronic permitting, and we have an electronic database going back to 1995. Since 1995, we've had 37 applications for eagle nest variances. One of them appeared to go nowhere. Three were withdrawn, and there were 33 others, and those 33 others did get the variances. There weren't any that were denied. Now, there's a variety of different conditions, and there's a variety of different kinds of variances. Many of the variances are in public land, which has that 330-foot setback. Others are in private land, where you have a 50-foot area, except for when there's a eagles that are actually nesting, then it jumps up to 330 feet. So there's a variety of conditions. Some of them are fairly costly. Sometimes it requires an eagle nest monitor to watch to see what kinds of activities are interfering with the nesting activities. Probably the most onerous conditions that we've had were with respect to blasting, like at Norway.
Stabler.
Pardon?
Stabler's
Point. Stabler's Point, right. We had some conditions that they could not blast at certain times of the year because it would interfere with those nesting activities. Those were some of the conditions that we were carrying forward to that latest DOT project north of town. But as we got further into it, we did withdraw those conditions and drop that blasting condition that we had. It did conflict with what Fish and Wildlife Service had on their permit that they granted to DOT on that one.
Just follow up on the Saber's point and the fact that we did have the monitoring there. What were the reported results from the monitors when they're blasting? Did the eagles abandon their nests or what?
You know, I don't have that information right now. I don't know of any cases where we didn't respond to whatever they requested. Mr. Watts here also, and he might have some of the information on it too, but I don't have any of that information right now. I don't know of any case where if there was something that occurred, the applicant didn't do something about it.
Ms. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've been getting emails on this particular issue for quite some time, and some of the emails asked, you know, why aren't they blasting now before nesting season begins, before some crucial window, which I don't pretend to know what the dates are. Can you all, somebody summarize this project and what exactly is going on? Why is this something that is suddenly so urgent and needs to be done right now? Is there a reason that this is before us here in the Assembly?
If I may, Ms. Danner, we've actually approved the variances for the DOT project, and I know there was some confusion out in the public today regarding that. This ordinance appears to have been introduced as a result of that, so we wouldn't have to deal with that with variances in that same manner in the future. But certainly, that's already been taken care of, and I believe the conditions on that variance were basically through the, still through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife permit, but it was in a different format with different input than what we had in the past. So now we're setting the stage, or as the Planning Commission recommended, not setting the stage for conversations in the future regarding Eagle's Nest variants. Because everything, to my knowledge, that we have on our plate in terms of the existing ordinance has already been taken care of for this year, at least in the docket.
And Ms. to Banner. Follow up then, so the variance that was granted, and I think I heard Mr. Pernula just say this, that the restriction on blasting is removed entirely in this new variance?
We approved that variance without any conditions. Excuse me, the Planning Commission approved the variance without any conditions.
I was a little slow here, and Mr. Watt, I'm going to put you quickly on the spot. If you have anything to add to Mr. Pernula's description of Sabler's Point in response to Mr. Dibdahl. Ms. Marlowe.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Watt and I both work with Stabler's Quarry. I was the monitor out at Stabler's Quarry when the quarry was being initiated and have spent a lot more time on site than I think Mr. Watt has. But what I would tell you about Stabler's Quarry is that as we initiated that quarry site, there was three active eagle nests that are still active. They don't use them every year, but usually one, two, sometimes three of the nests do see activity. And as we were proximate to the nests, we were required to have a monitor on site, and we paid that monitor. I'm trying to remember what we paid him, but it was an hourly wage, somewhere between $60 and $80 an hour. And so he was on site, and he took notes looking for stress and activity where they were abandoning the nests or stopping their nest building activities. We drilled, blasted, crushed rock, loaded it, and hauled it. And in the 5 to 6 years that it took for us to work our way outside of the eagle nest radius, we never had any problems or concerns from the eagle nest monitor. So it is possible to do.
Mr. Dibdahl.
Thank you.
Ms. Crane.
I would just say that Mr. Satre's made an excellent suggestion. There being so many differing opinions on the Planning Commission that I think it would be a good idea for us to remand this back to the Planning Commission and ask them again through the public process to grapple with this and bring a more comprehensive report back to the Assembly.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Likewise, can we not, I mean, an ordinance putting back in place certain tiered or however, that can happen at any time as well, can it not?
In terms of an enactment
yes.
To do so? The answer is yes.
And the reason I bring that up is because there was also reference to the comprehensive plan, which takes a lot of time.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I heard Mr. Swope earlier, perhaps it was in past meetings, have reference to specifics on the lack of the capability that we have in our staff, and I wonder if he wouldn't mind restating that, clarifying the existence or not of the staff in this area.
Sure, I'd be glad to. I think, you know, we frequently get into situations where we may be faced dealing with, you know, fish and wildlife resources, fisheries issues. Somebody referred to streamside setbacks, whales, impact of whales, which are, you know, within the waters of the city and borough of Juneau, eagles, for example. And we typically and almost always defer, and I keep telling staff, we have no biologists, and quite frankly, we really have no credibility to be making conditions and decisions on those resources, contrary to what a state or federal agency may be suggesting. And so, again, Dale mentioned we have access to some expertise on some of our boards, but on staff, we have no biologists. that in my opinion, in fact, I'm a biologist, and I find it interesting because I have a great deal of care and concern for the environment and the resources. But on this particular issue, when it came to us, I looked at it. We were suggesting much stringent requirements than what the Fish and Wildlife Service was. And I just imagine myself sitting here in an appeal to this body by the applicant in which I was arguing for stronger conditions than what three Fish and Wildlife Service biologists and a Forest Service biologist were advocating. I would have no credibility there, no standing, no credentials to be able to make that argument. So that was my concern with this. I just felt that we had within our land use code really some old conditions that have been there for a long time. In fact, we have throughout the land use code other conditions that we haven't necessarily established. We have inherited those conditions from other state and federal agencies, including streamside setbacks and those sort of requirements. We've just brought those in and included them, but we haven't generated those because of expertise we have in the city and borough of Juneau. If that makes sense. Anyway, it just concerns me when you get into these sort of situations where we're put in a position of trying to impose conditions different than what the experts in state or federal agencies are recommending as adequate.
Mr. Satre, if I might call on you again, I'd like you to reiterate how, if we were to refer this back to the commission, you would intend to deal with it, and perhaps a general sense of timing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Based on the conversation that the Planning Commission had last week, our intent would be to refer it immediately to our Title 49 committee to either reshape or bring in staff to somehow facilitate a committee discussion on how we would amend this ordinance. Would it be through prescriptive or rationalized variance criteria, as the comp plan suggests, or would it be amending the ordinance we have in front of us? We would then take that forward to the Planning Commission for public hearing and then ultimately back into your plate. Certainly, we have many things on our agenda at this time. There's wireless towers, we have noise ordinance, Mr. Pernula has a long list of priorities, including the comp plan, which I need to bring back into discussion, because one of the reasons for the recommendation of no was that the comp plan did not, it basically, this proposed ordinance did not fit in with the comp plan. It was a recommendation to move forward with the ordinance and adjust the comp plan later. And we are in the process of adjusting our comprehensive plan. As I believe Mr. Dibdahl suggested, it is a very long process. We're trying to keep it much shorter this time. But we will have to make those decisions on do you adjust the comp plan first and then move into the ordinance, or do we simply address the ordinance as suggested by the comp plan, as mentioned in the notice of decision in your packet. But so first things first, Title 49 committee. Figure out what the commission as a whole wants to do, so we have some sort of consensus moving forward, which we did not have this past week.
Let me call first on Ms. Becker and then Ms. Danner, okay. And then Mr. Keel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Where is this project? At what point is it, and what would the remanding it back to the commission do for time as far as stopping the project? What's the state of it at this point?
Mr. Swope.
So again, the project, this wouldn't stop the project. Okay. The project's moving forward.
This is for future.
Yeah, there's nothing that I'm aware of. There's no urgency or immediate need to take action on this. There's nothing pending that we've got to, make any immediate decision.
Okay. Thank you. It's later. It's to change it completely for a different...
Prospectively.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Danner, then Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe it's for this body to decide whether or not what the policy should be regarding eagles in general. It seems to me that we have, I don't understand if we have always allowed for protection of eagles, even though they weren't endangered here, why exactly we would change it. So I think we need to tell Title 49 and the Planning Commission what our expectations are. Do we want to change what we have always done in terms of eagle protection, or do we simply want them to provide for variances? That's my first point. And is it a question? Is there something you need to respond back to me with here, Mr. Satre?
I understand your comment. So, I mean, it's a valid question in terms of your body. I don't think I can provide anything else there.
And then my second point is the Title 49 Committee. This body back in, I think, September asked for Title 49 to be reexamined with regard to adding clarification on rezoning. And I don't like to see things. I know you guys are swamped. But I don't want that to get lost. I don't actually feel inclined to approve any changes to Title 49 until that one is before us as well. I'd like to have them there together.
Mr. Keel, followed by Mr. Wanamaker, followed by Mr. Dibdahl.
Just a brief question. And I'll plead new guy. I don't know how long I can get away with that. There was a concern about defending sort of an applicant's appeal. And I'm hoping someone will set me straight if my perception is wrong, because there are cases where we have sort of variance criteria. And it's always been my perception that if somebody comes in with experts, with a Fish and Wildlife Service permit that says, no, you don't need those kind of restrictions or whatever it is, that the Planning Commission considers those, and absent some strong reasons that somebody brings in a biologist who says, no, there's just no sedimentation risk from your project. I know you've got sort of a standard criteria for sediment control, but this one is just completely different. To what extent do we defer to that sort of expertise, generally speaking?
Mr. Pernula.
I think you're getting right to the crux of the problem with this ordinance. Most of our codes, we allow certain things to occur under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. For Eagle's Nest, it just says no development is permitted within 330 feet of an eagle's nest, period. And then the criteria for granting a variance is rather tough, and it's not really meant to deal with habitat issues. A better way to apply it would be to say, within 330 feet of an eagle's nest, if you're going to develop, you have to do these precautions that are listed. Then on top of that, if they can't meet those, then they come in for a variance. But right now, rather than thinking about what those criteria would be, they just have a total prohibition of any development within 330 feet of an eagle's nest.
So just to follow up, it sounds like there's a strong case to make our code more flexible in these cases. And I am not the expert to do it on the fly. It sounds like something that we should send the Planning Commission's direction.
Mr. Wanamaker, followed by Mr. Dibdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, I have a number of questions that I'll just probably say them for the record. One is, if this is remanded to the Planning Commission, one of the recommendations I would like to see from them and an analysis of it is what does it take to make this consistent with current federal law and policy. The other two questions are related, and they're probably more for Mr. Pernula. But I believe we have to be specific about what we want, not just remand it and hope that something good comes of it. That's why I say I want to know what is needed to make this our ordinance consistent with federal intent. And whether we even need an ordinance to be consistent with federal intent. But the next set of questions is really for Mr. Pernula. In the history that we have for our department and our planning commission. Has the department or the planning commission ever rejected, overruled, federal recommendations for permits regarding eagles and imposed more stringent conditions or denied something altogether? And second is, since this had been around for such a long time and the eagles were delisted in 2007, how did this stay in the comprehensive plan in the update?
Mr. Pernillo.
I think on the first question is, to my knowledge, none of them have ever been denied. None of those permits have ever been denied. As I mentioned, three were withdrawn, and one seemed to go nowhere. I'm not sure what happened to it. But the other 33 were approved with conditions. On most of those, we had recommendations from Fish and Wildlife Service. Now, I need to take out that sheet of paper to look at it again. We stopped getting recommendations from Fish and Wildlife Service in about 2008. Since then, three of the projects that we reviewed were DOT projects where they also had a Fish and Wildlife Service permit. So we used the permit in consideration of those later permits. And that's about it. Most of the rest of them, we had recommendations from Fish and Wildlife Service, and we pretty much followed those.
Mr. Wanamaker, anything further?
The second part then is, So I assume from your answer what you're saying is that the city has never denied or imposed stricter conditions than what Fish and Wildlife was recommending in those instances. Is that a correct assumption?
I can't think of any case where we did had a recommendation for a condition that was more restrictive than what was recommended to us by Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you. And then the follow-up is, follow-up on the second question I had was about the how did this stay in the comprehensive plan since it was delisted in 2007. And
Mr. Satry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Certainly it was recognized during the last revamp of the comp plan that we were issuing the variances per the Fish and Wildlife Service recommendations and that we had not denied any of these applications. So we recognize that. We recognize that something needs to be adjusted in the code, and that's why there is the recommendation to, at minimum, rationalize the Eagle's Nest variance criteria in the comp plan. That was added in our last revision.
Mr. Dick.
Mr. Mayor. I don't know. Somebody mentioned that had they ever been threatened, but there are some people, and probably a lot older than me, remember that at some point pre-statehood, eagles were actually, they were paid a bounty on them. And I think probably one of the biggest things historically was the better handling or totally banning the PCBs, which I think were affecting the hatching of the eggs for eagles. If we wanted to vote on it tonight, I don't see how that could would change anything really right now as far as an assignment to the Planning Commission. If there's some prescription that might solve the problem, but I have no problem voting on this tonight and then doing so with direction to the Planning Commission.
I'm going to suggest that we take a 10-minute break, after which we will make some decision. I'll have something to offer. There may be other members who will as well, but let's take a 10-minute recess.
You're listening to K2 News in Juneau, Alaska. The time is 8:20, and we're currently on a 10-minute break from the Juneau Assembly meeting, and I got a call in that there is a large, pure white husky Malamute with no collar running around in the area of the Treadwell ice rink. So if you're missing a white Malamute, check out the ice rink. There is one loose at large out in that area. Tonight, rain and snow at times becoming all rain by this evening from Mendenhall Valley south, snow mixing with rain overnight north of the Mendenhall Valley. Tuesday, rain, snow level 1,200 feet, highs around 36. Wednesday, rain likely, highs around 37. Thursday, rain, highs around 37, lows 33. Friday through Saturday, rain and snow likely, highs around 37, lows around 31.
If you're down and confused and you don't remember who you're talking to, concentration slip away, 'cause your baby is so far away. Well, there's a road in the distant land, and the eagle flies. Don't be angry, don't be sad, but don't sit crying over good times ahead. There's a girl right next to you, and she's just waiting for something to do. And there's a road in the blistered light, and the eagle flies with the girl. Take it easy. Well,
And we're currently taking a 10-minute break from the Juneau Assembly meeting. And if you are the owner of a large, pure white husky Malamute, there is one running around in the vicinity of the Treadwell Ice Rink and has no collar on, no identification. So, yeah, this dog is looking for something, probably you. We'll be on break for a few more minutes, and then we'll be joining the assembly meeting again.
Assembly will please come back to order. We have been, of course, discussing Ordinance 2012-01. My suggestion to the body is that we remand to the Planning Commission with instructions that the matter be assigned to its Title 49 Committee and a request that it bring forward its recommendations to the Assembly on Ordinance 2012-01, independent of the Commission's ongoing review of the comprehensive plan, so that we don't have this issue trailing the comprehensive plan review. I'll probably add one other caveat or one other instruction, which would be a request that the Commission confer with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the development of its recommendations. I see reaction. First, Mr. Wanamaker, then Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I can support the referral, but I would just like to add for the my belief that what's important here is that, to the fullest extent possible, the committee send back a recommendation that says is consistent with federal law and policy as regards eagles as possible, so that the city, to the fullest extent possible, parallels its efforts in the protection of eagles. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wonder if Mr. Satry could possibly suggest, in the ideal world, how much time this would take. And sorry, with his other priorities, because it's on our minds. We've had great public awareness, increase in public awareness on the issue, and I just wonder what his thoughts are on that.
Mr. Satry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's not going to be tomorrow. I would say that it certainly before the end of the year. I would like to, you know, it would be good of us to get recommendations back to your body by this summer to give you time to act on it. But, you know, we do need to get it assigned to committee. It is a public meetings that Title 49 will have to have, so we'll have to properly notice them. Probably going to take a couple, bring it back to the commission for consideration. Certainly, we want to make sure we're expediting all the other permit applications and variances in our timeline. But tentatively, without chatting with Mr. Panula, I would like to shoot for some time in the summer to get it back to you.
Thank you.
Further comments? Mr. Dibdahl.
Just procedurally, does Mr. Wanamaker have to withdraw his motion?
I don't
believe this is a motion to remand, which I think is a subsidiary motion, would be in order. Mr. Hartle, do you have any disagreement with that?
No.
Ruling as our parliamentarian? That's fine. Okay. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next on our agenda to Ordinance 2012-02-D. Thank you. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing Hughes Way to be replatted and developed in a manner that does not meet the current minimum subdivision standards required by the Land Use Code, and authorizing settlement of the Keiko Living Trust appeal.
Mr. Manager.
This non-code ordinance would allow the plat of Hughes Way to be processed as a minor subdivision and exempt it from certain requirements of the Land Use Code.
Adoption of this ordinance would resolve the pending Heikkila Living Trust appeal. Version D reflects minor changes made in response to negotiations with and among the parties to the settlement agreement. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on Ordinance 2012-02D? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move Ordinance 2012-02D for the purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
Thank you. I spoke with two members of that community today and found that this is a much more contentious issue than I realized. I need to understand before I can support this ordinance exactly what I need a little bit more information about the plan. In particular, it seems that the two people who stand to gain the most are actually not the ones whose property is being taken to expand the I'm concerned about Ms. Belcher's property, and I want to know how much of that property is going to be taken, the trees that are going to be taken there. I've heard 30 feet of her front yard. So, and also, I have concerns about a driveway that cuts down off what will be the cul-de-sac that has a steep embankment that could create a safety issue. So I need to know about those two particular pieces. Can anyone help me with that?
Go ahead. Call on Mr. Watt. Mr. Padula?
I think on with respect to the Belcher property, right now we currently have an easement for a turnaround for a cul-de-sac that would cut down a large portion of the trees in front of her property. The new alignment of the street would remove fewer trees, but Mr. Watt may have some additional information on that.
Mr. Watt?
With regard to the Belcher property, there is an existing right-of-way in what appears to be her front yard. And our position has been we'd like a cul-de-sac, but we don't really care where. Nobody in the neighborhood supports a cul-de-sac construction in the location of the right-of-way. So with the new location, Ms. Belcher would not get a cul-de-sac in her front yard, and she would get that right-of-way conveyed to her, but she would give up a different piece of property for the location of the new cul-de-sac. So she gives and she gets, but the cul-de-sac gets placed in a location that I think the whole neighborhood supports.
Let me interrupt real quick and see, is that the piece adjacent to her kitchen window, do you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where her kitchen window is.
Okay. There are two possibilities. The road currently is here. Is it going to go over, according to the road, or on the side of her property?
So and I guess we don't have any drawings in the packet, but the road would continue a bit further, and then the cul-de-sac would be at her more, I'm going to say, westerly property.
Okay. I think that is definitely the preferred of the two in that discussion. What about the safety issue associated with a road down to the beach and a steep embankment?
So... we've got Mr. Kibbe in the audience, and I think the only driveway that fits that criteria would be Mr. Kibbe's. And in the new alignment, the road moves away from Mr. Kibbe's property, so it won't make that situation any worse. The driveway is going to come off either the existing or the new road and cul-de-sac, but the new road and cul-de-sac moves away from Mr. Kibbe's property.
Mr. Watt, I think it's reflected here as well. And is there any reason to believe that any of the property owners involved do not support the settlement at this stage?
I certainly haven't heard any reason that they don't support it.
Again, our record reflects that all property owners have signed the settlement. And
in the absence of anyone here to testify otherwise, I would accept that documentation. It is simply all we have before us. Unfortunately, my discussions with the two today in just checking say that Mr. Kibbe is quite persuasive and not necessarily always to everyone's benefit.
Would you like to examine Mr. Kippy?
That would probably be fair of me to give him a chance at the mic, wouldn't it, since I've just said something rather not nice.
Mr. Kippy.
Good evening, Mayor, Assembly members. My name is Ralph Kippy, 1980 Hughes Way.
And Mr. Kippy, I'm pleased to meet you. And I apologize for my, this is how I meet a lot of people, as a matter of fact.
Well, I do take offense to your comment without knowing me or knowing anything to do with the property. So if you could start over, I'd appreciate it.
And please let me start again.
Thank you.
And I'm not really sure where to go on this. I did reach out to members of your community, actually to Dixie, because I know her, and said, so, I, you know, just want to make sure everything is cool. Mm-hmm. And she said she's sick. She says she's ready to move from Juneau because her front yard is going to be taken away. And all her trees that she loves so much, it just breaks her heart. But she said, but I'm not as upset as Jeff. I don't know your neighbors very well. And he's particularly concerned about the safety issue and about the urgency with which he had to sign the agreement. I hate to have a third-party discussion here without everyone present. And this is part of my inexperience in how to deal with matters like this one. So let me pause.
Well, let me make a couple comments.
Please.
This neighborhood has been in turmoil and issues with this long before Julie and I moved to the neighborhood. Right now, if you were to go out into that area, you have one lane. You can't get, you know, going down Ann Coleman right now, you could not pass two vehicles. It's, as far as Hughes Ways go, the city has no place to turn around when today, when they push their snow down to the end of the road. There's no cul-de-sac. They left a berm there. The people from Dixie's house could not, one of them couldn't get their car up or out. There is a cul-de-sac platted, as you talk about Dixie's window. Yes, it would. You would see it out her window, and you'd also have it coming across the front of her house, part of it. And that's the alternative the city has. And that still leaves a traffic nightmare for that, what's now becoming a very dense area in that small community of Hughes Way. So it has been hard for everybody. It's been hard for Julie and I and all of our neighbors with changes. And this was the best alternative. Everybody came to that decision that this was the best alternative to come up with some standardization of road, some ability to have a cul-de-sac for emergency vehicles, which we don't have right now. Julie and I anticipated our parents living with us. Right now, we don't have that ability. One of the neighbors had a party the other day, and they had six cars lined up. And with the snow, I can't get out of my garage or up the driveway. So this is going to take care of life safety issues, traffic. It's going to add to the value of properties. Specifically, Dixie is going to end up vacating that cul-de-sac by the city to her. Right now, the easement that's existing, 15 feet of that, of the 45-foot width proposed for the non-court ordinance, is going to be coming out of hers and Jeff's. In exchange, the next-door property that adjoins hers, they're going to get a 230-foot buffer, 40-foot wide, adjoining their whole property line that is into perpetuity a greenbelt, never to be built on. We're talking over 9,000 square feet. They're probably, you know, I don't know. I've never measured it. Maybe, you know, in essence, without the easement, they're probably letting go of 1,000, 1,500 square feet or something. The adjoining neighbors are putting up $25,000 each. Neither one of those folks. So I think, there's a give and take, and everybody's really worked, you know, with one another to come up with a compromise. And, yes, begrudgingly, we've all signed a settlement agreement. We also had started this agreement in 2007 because we recognized before we were even into this issue with an appeal with the Planning Commission that something had to be done. And, I can understand Dixie, Jeff, Ginny, myself, the Kaikalas. None of us are happy. None of us are happy. But it's the worst of all evils because right now we don't have, again, the safety issues, traffic controls, snow removal. Even the garbage truck has trouble, in the summertime, let alone trying to deal with it right now. An emergency vehicle a year ago came down there in the wintertime and went to make the turn onto Hughes Way and ended up sliding off to the side and had to call somebody else to come in and pull them out. So, yes, there's two sides to this story.
And can I,
Ms. Banner,
ask a question? Can you describe this road to the beach? And does it, in your opinion, pose safety issues for cars turning around and once this new cul-de-sac is in place?
I think that's just a misstep or an oversight in the information that you have. I have access to my garage on Hughes Way, and I also have a steep driveway that goes down and accesses the beach and a lower shop area for my own use. It's not for the public's use. This Hughes Way is not going to be elevated in such a fashion that it's going to be impeding traffic. It's going to help traffic tremendously. So this driveway is strictly for my own use.
Further questions? Just to summarize, as the findings in this non-code ordinance lays out, this settlement was a result of mediation in turn triggered by a scheduling conference for hearing, and all parties entered into the settlement agreements. Certainly the assembly's prerogative to defer or decline to act, but if action is not taken by February 15th, the settlement agreement by its own terms is null and void and will return to be looking forward to an appeal in April. I would say I'm troubled to the extent that if there is a party that wish to withdraw from the agreement, and there are, of course, contractual issues separate from this, from our role in a quasi-judicial capacity, I would have nonetheless expected that there would have been notice to me as the presiding officer of their intent to withdraw. Those are my comments. Any further discussion? Mr. Keogh.
I do have, and I believe it's a question for Mr. Watt, if we're prepared to shift from the previous element. This is, as I read this, and of course now I can't find my note, a capital improvement project by agreement, by settlement, by something. And I note that in the documentation, two of the parties have agreed each to put forward a fairly significant sum of money. Do we have a total cost estimate for the CIP that we're looking at?
Mr. Watt.
We think about $100,000.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next on our agenda, Ordinance 2011-11-Y. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $10,300 as additional funding to the Juneau Public Libraries for the Public Library Assistance, Regional Mail Services, and Continuing Education Grants. Grant funding provided by the Alaska Department of Education.
Mr. Manager.
I think it gets easier from here on out. This ordinance is a housekeeping measure that would appropriate $10,300 to increase the FY12 adopted budget for three library grants. At the time the FY12 budget was adopted, the exact amount of the grant was unknown, and the amounts adopted were based on the best information available at that time. The actual grant awards have been received and are higher than originally estimated. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on Ordinance 2011-11-Y? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Crane.
I would move for adoption Ordinance 2011-11-Y and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection?
Only to note, I don't believe that I have a conflict of interest. However, I have in my paid employment done significant work on the Department of Education and Early Development budget, and so I note my involvement. I certainly cast no votes on it.
And I take it that it's been in your role as a legislative assistant?
Strictly in that role, Mr. Mayor.
I rule you have no conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Again, is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We have next before us Ordinance 2011-11-Z. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $50,000 as grant funding for lighting upgrades at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Grant funding provided by the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Mr. Manager.
These funds would be used to remove and replace existing house lights with energy-efficient fluorescent lights for the high bay spaces and install conduit and cable extensions that would allow for future installation of a modest theatrical lighting system. Public Works and Facilities Committee recommended approval of this action at its November 7th meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on Ordinance 2011-11-Z? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2011-11-Z and have a question.
You have the floor.
There is no economic impact note attached. I think it was an oversight in the packet. Can anyone tell me if there are any contributions required from CBJ?
Mr. Manager?
No, there aren't. There's no matching requirement. Is that what you're asking? No matching requirement for the grant.
Can I ask for unanimous consent, Mr. Manager?
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us to new business. Our first item is the Marine Passenger Fee Reappropriation Request. You should have in your red folder materials pertaining to it. Mr. Manager?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you recall, last year when you approved the Marine Passenger Fees for the Franklin Dock, there were a number of projects listed out and funding sources for those projects. And the way we do it is that as they incur expenses for that project, they'll go ahead and send us an invoice, and we'll pay against the invoice, and they'll continue to do that until the project is finished and closed out. So we know that it has been closed out. And I did ask Craig and his staff to take a look at these projects that they've listed here and confirm that, in fact, they have been invoice paid and closed out. So this is a request from the Franklin Dock folks to take the money that was left over from those various projects. They didn't spend all the money on them, so there was leftover monies in each project, and they would like to take the money, reappropriate it to a new project, which they submitted this year for funding under marine passenger fees. It's a covered area for covered passenger walkway area. The cost of the project is $170,000. They would like to take this money, if you would agree, reappropriate it, and apply it to that project, so they would really only incur $40,000. The reason they ask is if they got approval from you to do this to reappropriate the funds. They could actually get the project done this year prior to the season. Otherwise, they'd have to wait until we went through our marine passenger fee process, get the funds, and they wouldn't be able to do it for another year. That makes sense. So I told them that I don't have the authority to agree to reappropriate those funds since they had been approved by you all for specific projects. To do that, they would have to come back and get your approval.
Mr. Hartle, if I might ask, what form would this generally take? Reappropriation ordinance?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think the deputy mayor is trying to get your attention.
I'm sure he's going to ask whether he may be recused.
I am.
And the answer is yes, you may, given our standing matter. And I know that issue will arise with the next item we're going to be taking up with another member here.
Okay. So I think it should take the form of a motion. Basically, the assembly would be amending the project description that was in last year's capital projects budget, marine passenger fee budget, and it would be a small change to that project description as outlined by the manager.
So, and Mr. Manager, may we assume that you've actually recommended that we make this redesignation?
Yes.
Is there any member who would object to you've heard the manager's recommendation. Is there any objection to it or discussion on it? Mr. Keel, Ms. Danner.
A question. What is the general timing on our consideration of next year's requests? I believe the proposed list was just noticed for public comment. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's out for public comment now.
And a project basically of this description is on that list.
Yes, the project, the covered area project, is currently on that list for, it originally was identified at $170,000. I think they say it's the new estimate's $185,000, but that's on the list, correct?
So just
Mr. Keel.
And the timing is that's part of the budget. It's part, in fact, it's in your budget, assembly and mayor and assembly budget. So it would be adopted at the time the budget's adopted, which would probably be May. I mean, you've got to adopt it by June 15th by charter.
And effective July 1st, 2020.
Correct.
Mr. Keel.
Just to conclude, I appreciate the opportunity to complete it on an earlier schedule, but I feel as though we're jumping that public comment process and the consideration of the rest of the list. That's my concern.
Ms. Dan?
And my concern is that I haven't really had time, because these came in our red folder, to give them fair consideration. Is this something then that what's recommended would come back to us for consideration at our next meeting, and would there be public hearing at that time? Is it an ordinance or a resolution? I missed that.
It's actually the form of, as I understand it, a form of motion, which is in essence what we have before us. So to the extent that a member wishes more time to reflect on it would be a motion to table until the next regular meeting. Mr. Hartle? We need a brief. We're going to take a brief at ease. There's some question about what vehicle is the appropriate vehicle.
We have to amend that ordinance if we adopt it.
Yeah.
So
let's go ahead and have to introduce it and act on an ordinance. There needs to be an ordinance.
You're listening to K2 News in Juneau, Alaska. The Juneau Assembly is taking a brief at ease. And we'll be back with them shortly.
The Juneau World Affairs Council's annual fundraising event, the Trivia Game World Quest, is coming up on Friday, February 3rd. Get your teams together or come solo and join a team at the door to test your knowledge of world affairs with an international buffet, no host bar, a silent auction that includes desserts. Join friends February 3rd, 6:30 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Get tickets from members or at the door. For more information, go to jwac.org.
UAS Career Education is pleased to invite the public to celebrate Career and Technical Education Month with free Saturday how-to workshops. The workshops kick off this Saturday, February 4th, with how to prepare your marine cooling system for spring. Other workshops cover diesel maintenance for pickup trucks, changing the door threshold.
I've had a few moments to reflect on the comments I had made earlier to the manager on this and also to speak with the finance director. As the finance director correctly pointed out, the marine passenger fee appropriation was approved by the assembly in a lump and not by individual project. Only the finance committee, I was starting to say, as he just mentioned, had gone into the individual projects. And so that all you would be doing, that money has been appropriated, and all that the assembly needs to do now, if it chooses to, would be to redesignate a part of that money that it's already approved. It could be done, I think, by motion. Of course, it could be done at the next meeting or some future meeting if that would be preferable to have a better opportunity to learn about it.
Mr. Dibdahl?
And the net effect would be it would be reduced by $43,000 for 2012.
It would be reduced by $142,000, yeah. So currently, as I recall, I mean, these are round numbers. They're not precise, but I think they came in with requests totaling about $290,000. So if you were to approve this, it would reduce that amount by $142,000. They're not asking for this in addition to what they've already requested.
Further discussion? Ms. Danner.
Move to table, please.
Motion to table until the next regular meeting.
Yes, please.
Heard the motion. Discussion on the motion. Mr. Dibdahl.
And that will do what?
Postpone action until the next meeting.
And will, what form will it come back in?
It'll be a motion pending.
But it will not be an ordinance.
Will not be an ordinance.
Objection.
Mr. Keel.
Will the public comment period on the proposed list for the coming year be closed by then? Will those comments be available to us?
Mr. Swope?
Next meeting is the 13th?
That's correct.
I don't know. It'll be real close. I'm not sure how long it's been out. I would say probably not. I think the public comment period, it's a 30-day comment period. And, I think it would probably, comment period is going to go beyond the 13th.
Mr. Dibdahl.
This was 2011. Public comment was made on that money already.
Correct. I think he was asking about the current recommendations that are out for public review. But, yeah.
Motion before us is to table. Madam Clerk, call the roll, please.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mr. Dibdahl?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Pass.
It's one or the other,
okay.
Mr. Keel.
yes.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Stone? Oh, sorry. Mr. Wanamaker?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mayor Patello?
No.
Motion fails.
And we have the motion before us. Further discussion? Objection. Madam Clerk, call the roll, please.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Danner?
I need clarification on the motion.
The motion is to approve the manager's recommendation, which is the reallocation towards this project, the amount of $142,000.
Thank you. No.
Mayor Patello?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Mr. Stone, if you'd rejoin us. We turn next to the annexation funding request. Mr. Wanamaker has declared a conflict of interest here, has conferred with the city attorney, who has confirmed that, and it's a result of his role as an officer of Goldbelt, Inc., major landholder holder within the area being considered. And Mr. Wanamaker, my ruling is that you be recused. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we turn now, Mr. Manager, if you or Mr. Hartle wish to summarize the request.
Okay. Just, as you recall, this is with regard to annexation, and we had previously retained Juneau Economic Development Council to help us with that project. They did the work that we had asked for them to do at that time. They have been paid. There, of course, is additional work that yet to be done, as identified by Amy Mead, who's an attorney in the law department with us. There's a review of filings, some work on strategizing to prepare for hearings on Petersburg's petition, as well as some additional research needs. Ms. Mead asked if it would be possible to get some additional help to do that work, and her preference was to retain Scheinberg and Associates, one, because the person that was with JEDC that did the lion's share of the work for us previously now works for Scheinberg and Associates. Excuse me. And I would also say previously we did contact Scheinberg and Associates to ask them if they'd do the work, and she didn't have time available and was not able to do it, but she now is. And the reason we had approached her initially is because she had done this work previously for another municipality, was very familiar with how it worked, and would have already hit the ground running with a lot of experience. So having said that, I'll let John add anything, but it appears that Ms. Mead did contact Ms. Scheinberg to see if she was interested and to give us an initial estimate at what it was cost if we were to sign a professional services contract with her. And you can see Ms. Scheinberg wrote back based on what we identified as work that needs to be done. She suggested an amount not to exceed $6,000. We would bill out on an hourly basis. And so I guess that question is before you, whether or not you would support us entering into a contract with Scheinberg and Associates for an amount not to exceed $6,000. And I guess I would identify Better Capital, again, as the source of funding for this.
Perhaps one other question that would be helpful is the urgency immediacy of completion of this work.
I could speak to that. We just got an email today from the Local Boundary Commission indicating how quickly they're going to be going through the process, and they shortened it as of today. Apparently the commission is now on an even faster schedule. I think we would be fortunate to have Ms. Scheinberg's help.
You've heard the recommendation of the manager. Discussion. Is there objection? Mr. Keel?
My objections are twofold, and one I'll be very brief about. I was a no vote on filing the petition. I saw near-term and long-term costs without significant long-term benefits, and I won't beat that to death. I also don't particularly believe this is consistent with the purposes of the Better Capital City Fund. I don't think it's a fund source that's in keeping with an adversarial procedure, not because we're picking a fight, but because that's just what it ends up being with the other borough. That's how it's set up. So those are my objections, Mr. Mayor.
Further discussion? Madam Clerk, if you'd call the roll, please.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Stone?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Danner?
No.
Mr. Dipto?
Yes.
Mayor Botello?
Yes.
Motion carries.
That brings us, Mr. Wanamaker, if you would rejoin us. Thank you. That brings us next to the liquor license protest recommendation. Mr. Manager.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to defer to HRC or go ahead and?
It didn't go to HRC.
It didn't go to HRC today. Okay. Before you is a request for approval of a beverage dispensary license for Sandbar, doing business as the Sandbar, location 2525 Industrial Boulevard. The finance department has indicated that the above business owes an outstanding sales tax delinquency and also is delinquent in and I was just told by the finance director they still owe us money, but they did file their sales tax returns for the months of August, September, October, and November. Is that correct?
Yes.
But they did not remit the money with the returns, so they're still in arrears. As such, I would recommend we protest the continued operation of this liquor license until the outstanding sales tax are brought current, and as well as interest and penalties.
You've heard the recommendation of the manager. Ms. Danner?
Yes, I would move the assembly protest beverage dispensary license number 2844 for Sandbar, Inc., doing business as the Sandbar, due to outstanding sales tax delinquencies, and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Tibdall.
Just a question. The amount seems so small. What happens? They come in, they pay the tax like tomorrow.
Mr. Harnell.
We've run into this many times in the past, and in our past experience, that has happened. They come in and pay it off. And we will withdraw the protest the hour they come current with their sales tax.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to staff reports. Mr. Manager?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Hart?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
We move next to assembly reports and committee reports. I'll briefly summarize the committee of the whole. Last week, we heard reports on the State Library Archives and Museum project. We had an update on the Willoughby District, and we discussed and provided instructions to staff with regard to waste management and ongoing negotiations. And with that, Mr. Stone, any announcement about next committee of the whole?
I don't think we've set a date, but I know that Ms. Danner has a request to bring the committee of the whole on that.
And we'll turn to Ms. Danner and the Human Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Human Resources Committee met to hold their regular January 30th meeting this evening at 6 p.m., and we have a number of appointments for the Assembly's consideration. For the Jensen Olson Arboretum Board, the Human Resources Committee recommends reappointment of Ms. Patricia Harris to the seat reserved for the Seal Trust and to Mr. Ed Byarski to the Horticulture seat, both for terms expiring January 31, 2015.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
The HRC recommends reappointment of Ms. Rosemary Hagevig and Ms. Tamara Rowcroft to the Juneau Affordable Housing Commission for terms expiring January 31, 2015.
Again, you've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. We also, the Human Resources Committee recommends appointment of Ms. Elizabeth Terry to a seat reserved for the members 55 years or older with the Juneau Commission on Aging for a term expiring June 30, 2015.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. We also recommend appointment of Ms. Judith Porter to a public seat on the Personnel Board for a term expiring January 31, 2015.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
The HRC further recommends appointment of Mr. Michael Christensen to an open seat on the Social Services Advisory Board for a term expiring September 30, 2013.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. And for our last, the HRC recommends reappointment of Ms. Brenda Wright to the Wetlands Review Board for a term expiring December 31, 2014.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And there are more seats available on these and other boards, and members of the public who are interested in learning more should check us out on www.juno.org or see your municipality in the Juno Empire on Fridays. Additionally, at tonight's HRC, we had a discussion about the composition of the Human Resources Committee. Its current number four make any two members outside of a scheduled meeting a violation of the Open Meetings Act. And we would like to request a discussion of the pros and cons of changing that composition, and the recommendation was for that to happen at the Committee of the Whole.
Is there objection to referral to the Committee of the Whole? Hearing none, so ordered.
That's all we have. Thank you.
We turn next to Lands and Resources. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Lands Committee met and talked about the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, who would like to renew their contract with us for the pathology lab at Twin Lakes, and for that they would keep Twin Lakes stocked with salmon fry and do other improvements as they have done. It'd be a 10-year lease with some renewals, and the Lands Committee asks for your support, the Assembly's support for that.
There's the recommendation of the committee. Is there discussion or objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. The Lands Committee reviewed the House Bill 264 that you have in your red folder that was introduced by Representative Munoz. It is the Affordable Housing Commission also approved the concept of this. The Lands Committee requests that the Assembly consider a motion of support for the concept and the intent of this bill, knowing that there's a possibility that there will be some changes in the language.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Discussion. Is there objection to preparation of a resolution in support? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. Alaska Brewery has expressed an interest in acquiring some land next to our Public Works Department in the Costco area, and we did discuss that. And the Lands Committee requests a motion of support to authorize the manager to negotiate for the disposal of these lots to Alaska Brewery.
Again, you've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there discussion or objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. Department of Transportation would like 970 square feet right away from the city in order to put in a right-hand turn on the southbound lane going Stephen Richards and the Mendenhall Loop Road to Stephen Richards. And they want 907 square feet. And Planning Commission will have to go through this first, but at the end of that, the Lands Committee does support this proposal, and we ask that the Assembly approve that right away.
And I assume that will take the form of an ordinance coming towards us.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. That brings us next to the Finance Committee and Ms. Crane.
Nothing this evening.
And finally, we turn to our Public Works and Facilities Committee, Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Works and Facilities Committee met on January 23rd. And we heard informational presentations from Bartlett Regional Hospital on the Child Adolescent Mental Health Center that they're interested in constructing, and Capital Transit presented information about their maintenance and upgrade wishes for their facility for maintenance of the fleet, and Parks and Rec submitted a list of items that they would like to have funded and some upgrades that they would like to do, all to come from the special 1% sales tax. The committee heard the information, and the information will flow to the Finance Committee. We heard it, and at our next meeting on February 6th, we're going to receive information and, again, a request for funding from the 1% sales tax from the Sealaska Heritage Institute for the Walter Soboloff Center. And that concludes the report. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll begin with you, Mr. Wanamaker, for liaison reports.
The the Juneau Chamber of Commerce meeting, board meeting for tomorrow afternoon is canceled. It will be rescheduled in so that people can attend the memorial services for Romer Durr. So have a report after the next meeting. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
No report, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Keel.
Nothing to report tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Dibnall.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Green.
While snow may still be causing some problems within the borough, we're delighted with it at Eagle Crest.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
How are the docks with all that snow? Yeah.
Docks and Harbor may or may not agree. At this point, Docks and Harbor is leaning toward establishing that 1% for art panel when the project is at 65% design. The meeting to discuss the potential renaming of the Douglas Harbor is now scheduled for March 29th. That is a change. The Planning Commission will continue discussion regarding the conditional use permit of 16B on February 28th. There are two main concerns. One is the Fisheries Memorial, and the other is Taku Smokeries. And so the Docks and Harbors is going to put up buoys around the area where the fishing boats would have to go in to get to Taku Smokeries so they can run a navigational test, see if it works. So they've chosen, I think it's a 58-foot commercial fishing boat. Does that make sense, what I've just said? These are requested for assembly resolution. The Tricano Knoll Avenue CBJ Tideland lease, the Juneau Alaska Communication Tideland lease, which is the Juneau Radio Tower in Douglas, $600,000 for engineering design for phase one at Aurora Harbor.
And I take it those will be coming the normal course to the Department of Law for drafting.
Thank you. The port director and the harbor master are now in Seattle at the boat show representing us, and the harbor view of the harbor masters and the port administrators. And while they're there at the booth, the Juneau booth, they will be providing incentives to boaters who want to come to Juneau this summer by means of a discount in stall rental. Okay. The Alaska Committee report, we had a good report about gavel to gavel, and one thing I would like to mention to you is that one of the improvements that they are doing is a mobile website that allows iPhone and Android users to watch live TV or archived events on their phone. We had a very successful legislative reception. Thank you to all of you who were there to greet, and thank you to the businesses and others who contributed to the welcome basket, which was very nice. Makes you want to be a legislator, but not a lot. But you know. We also met with the Alaska Airline representatives and discussed the constituent fair, the financial support that's been given to Alaska, and a request that we have that they discuss with us support for the Palmer and the Fairbanks fairs that we have each summer. And we discussed some of their future plans, which includes retiring the 400 series and replacing it with the 900 and many other things that they have in mind. We had our annual meeting. The Alaska Committee had the annual meeting. We discussed SLAM, the gavel to gavel, ways to improve the capital city. And the one concern of the Alaska Committee is that our snow removal has to be, we feel it needs to be in very good shape at the airport because we are greeting the legislators and guests who are coming for the legislative session. And we elected board members. The Sustainability Committee, we had a retreat Saturday. We discussed sustainability indicators, the climate action plan implementation, the green team efforts, web page redesign, and possible cruise ship awards. I'm not quite done, okay? The a good thing that happened, the After School Coalition received a city spotlight in the National League of Cities, where it was recognized for implementation of our After School Coalition and the fact that we're now having after school activities for the middle school. And so they gave us kudos for that. Let's see, what else? And then the last thing, the last thing will be later, I think. Oh, no, I have two more things, I'm sorry. United Way. And these both pertain to our assembly because we do help in some funding. The diversity workshop would be this Thursday and Friday at the UAS Armory. And Leadership Juno starts in February, and applications are due, and we have two scholarships that have been contributed for two people who would like to do Leadership Juno.
Thank you, Ms. Danner.
Thank you. For my liaison reports, the LEPC meets at noon on February 8th at the hospital, and the airport board meets also on February 8th at 6 p.m. at the airport. That's all.
Mr. Stone.
I have no report this time, Mr. Mayor.
That brings us next to assembly comments and questions. First, I just want to express, I think, on behalf of the full assembly, our condolences to the Durr family at the loss of Romer, who truly dedicated his life to making Juneau a better place. And he'll be missed not only in his family's hearts, but I think in the hearts of many, many Juneauites. And people, generations yet to come, are going to benefit from things that Romer has done. Mr. Stone.
I have no comments, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to comment on the testimony of Jenny Del Rosario with relation to spring break and gold medal. I think gold medal is a very important part of our connection with Southeast Alaska. Frankly, I think schools are an important part of our community as well, and I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know what we can do to help. I don't know what our role is in this, but I hope we'll find one and help to somehow find a compromise.
Let me ask on that topic whether the assembly would be comfortable in expressing our concern about the scheduling and the importance that we place on gold medal in Juneau. Ms. Becker and then Mr. Dimdall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I certainly support the gold medal tournament also, but I don't know that it's going to be canceled because we continue with school. It will definitely be more difficult. It will not be the same as if they were not there because they really do use a lot of the school, but I have not heard that it's going to be canceled if we don't have a spring break.
Mr. Dimdall.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more serious than that because I don't know. Way back when it used to happen actually in February. But now I think almost all the school districts in Southeast Alaska have that at the very same time so that all these people that we want coming here and that spend a lot of money and support gold medal can be here all at that same time. It also has worked out well, and they have made adjustments when the Association of High Schools had changed their state tournaments. So that's, there are those things to think about as well. And so So I feel like they'd be planning in a vacuum if they don't consider, in this instance, all the rest of the school districts in Southeast Alaska. It's a pretty big thing this year. I think the gold medal tournament is getting named to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, and they'll be sending representatives to Anchorage to receive that award on February 28th. I think they've made as many accommodations as they can, and I for one support them keeping with the spring break at the point of time. If it goes off into April, you're talking about all of the surrounding communities. People are going fishing and doing those kind of things. Everything's starting up for the spring, and so participation both on a team basis and on a people basis, I think, would suffer terribly.
Any further comments, Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think we ought to let this, before we express any preference, we ought to remember first that the school board is charged with setting school district programs and policies and goals and priorities. They're a separate entity. If we do want to make a recommendation, then we ought to hear from them first as to their reasoning. I believe there are some financial implications to what they're considering, and since they're struggling with budget shortfalls, just as we are going to be struggling with budget shortfalls, probably it's wise to hear from them before we make any type of recommendation at all. Thank you.
Ms. Becker.
I was going to say exactly what Mr. Wanamaker said, so you can put it down twice. I do agree with him completely.
Would any member object to me speaking with Ms. Sadler to have a better understanding of their constraints and to share, again, I think not any in the form of a directive, and I'm very sensitive to the prerogatives of the school board and the functions that have been delegated to them. My concern is that and they may well be fully aware of these issues, but what I'd like to do is be able to communicate with the president of the board about it, and will not do so unless the if the body objects.
Just one other comment, and I remember this. I think this came to me last year. A number of people were concerned. I mean, I can't imagine having gold medal at the same time schools in session. The parking issues are going to be tremendous. I mean, we had problems just with parking, absent school being in session last time, and I think I'm trying to think back, but I remember I made some promises to some folks about some things we would do to try to improve the parking situation and accommodate some of the folks that were having problems. So when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, boy, we could have ourselves a real mess to have gold medal at the same time that school districts holding classes. I can't imagine how that's going to work. If that's the case, we're really going to have to spend some time figuring out how we're going to accommodate folks.
Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was thinking that because I know that this is a complex issue at the school district, it'd probably be advisable to have that talk with the board president and the superintendent at the same time so that you get the staff view with all the reasoning that goes in behind it.
Mr. Wanamaker, I think your point's well taken, and I will endeavor to do so. I may take advantage of another meeting later this week with both the superintendent and the president of the school board. Ms. Danner, anything further? Ms. Becker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to request an executive session at the next assembly meeting to discuss land acquisition.
And those are pending land acquisition,
yes.
A status report, basically.
Yes, please.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Anything further? Ms. Becker, anything further?
No, thank you. Thank you.
Ms. Crane?
Nothing, thank you.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing
more,
thank you.
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me begin by echoing Ms. Becker's comments about the Welcome to Juneau reception and thank so many people who helped make it happen, who contributed to the event, the many Juneau residents who came out to speak with and welcome legislators and legislative staff to our community. Feedback has been resoundingly positive within the legislature, and it went off remarkably well. So let me add to her thanks. I have two sort of internal procedure questions here, and they certainly don't need to be answered tonight. The first is really that as I was reviewing our minutes, I noticed that sort of things are sometimes handled very differently. We had an ordinance at our last regular meeting, which authorized us to refund $6.3 million in bonds. And the description of our discussion was that there were questions from three assembly members. A couple of subsequent issues had, I think, roughly equivalent conversations and are described on the order of a page or two pages apiece. And so I know that we don't want a transcript of the meetings. That would be a burden to staff and more than anybody needs. But it strikes me that a little more thorough treatment, I think, of some of those $6.3 million questions is probably advisable in our minutes. And so I'd welcome the opportunity to sort of talk about that either with you or with the clerk at a future opportunity. In like vein, we had an issue before us tonight that generated a lot of public comment, both at the meeting but also via the excellent contact the assembly function at the city's website. People can hit one button and get a message to us all. I wonder if there's a way that those comments can be made a part of the packet, especially that's available to the public. We all saw them, of course. We all got them emailed to us, but folks in the room, folks reading up on our agenda tonight, didn't get, I believe, any opportunity to see the, I don't know, 12, 14 emails that came to the entire group. So I would be very interested in when comments come in via the city's website, the entire assembly on an issue before us, in making that part of the record of our proceedings. It's available to everyone. And I don't know what needs to happen to make that possible.
Well, if let me suggest that perhaps on both these items we might perhaps have a staff report at the next meeting. At least on the second. Let me the first. I think the minutes are usually quite detailed in setting forth. The discussion points. I think what you've identified is an anomaly, I think that can be dealt with without further real action. I think the second question raises a little more discussion or merits more discussion in this respect. Do we notify the public that when they send an email to us that it is, in fact, something that is available, broadly available to any member of the public to review? If we make it our policy that that is the case, will it have a chilling effect on people contacting us, just as a citizen who decides to use another medium, which is a telephone call to each of us individually, may or may not want to have that information widely disseminated. I think that is a competing issue that, again, were we to make the change that you've suggested, I think we need to reflect on. I don't have the answer. I just would suggest that we may want to look at that, and there may be some public records issues in any event. I have no doubt that those communications are a matter of public record. But again, weigh in the question of
the extent to which, if we make that our policy, do we notify members of the public on the website that their remarks to us, in essence, are broadly disseminated and available to all to see, and what the consequence of that may be.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I throw the issue out to sort of discuss and chew on. It seems to me that those things that are public record already, we don't do a lot of damage by making them public. But I would welcome the recommendations of the clerks and the manager and a report on whether it's going to be feasible without tremendous additional staff time.
Sure.
Thank you. My only other comment is that we passed on the consent agenda tonight a resolution having to do with fish taxes, which required us to find that we suffered the impacts of commercial fishing. And I looked it up. I went to the statutes, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. We're in a community that supports commercial fishing as much as we do and values our commercial fishing economy. In fact, to get the shared taxes to which we're entitled, we have to suffer. And so I thought it a good opportunity to note that oddity and to say that while certainly there were impacts, we welcome them.
Mr. Mayor, I should say after I prepared the resolution, the manager called me and said, we need to change this suffering. And so I went to the statutes and the regulation and called him back to say we have to suffer to get that money.
And we do. Mr. Smith.
No further comments, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wanamaker.
No comments, Mr. Mayor.
That brings us then to our final action tonight, which is an executive session to continue with our manager selection process to conclude that. The assembly my recommendation would be to recess into room 224 to consider our deliberations. Once we've done so, to return to this room. The chair would entertain a motion to go into executive session at this moment.
Mr. Mayor, I would so move.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to comment on the propriety of the executive session? Hearing none, public participation is closed. Is there objection by any member? Hearing none, we will recess into executive session and conclusion of our business, we will return to the room here to take final action and adjourn the meeting. We are in recess.
You're listening to K2 News. It's 9:40, and the Juneau Assembly has gone into executive session. They will be back, and we will stand by and wait for the conclusion of the meeting. Tonight, rain and snow at times becoming all rain by this evening from Mendenhall Valley south. Snow mixing with rain overnight north of Mendenhall Valley. Tuesday, rain. Tuesday night, rain. Wednesday, rain likely. Wednesday night, rain. Thursday and Thursday night, rain. Highs around 37, lows around 33. Friday through Saturday, rain and snow likely. And Saturday night and Sunday, mostly cloudy. Chance of rain and snow, lows 30, highs 37.
Ketchups with it.
That's right, all the fanciest Dijon ketchup.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you a green dress,
but not a real green dress, that's cruel.
And if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you some art,
a Picasso or a Garfunkel.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you a monkey.
Haven't you always wanted a monkey?
If I had $1 million, I'd buy you.
She can kill with a smile, she can wound with her eyes, and she can ruin your faith with her casual lies. And she only reveals what she wants you to see. She hides like a child, but she's always a woman to me. She can lead you to love, she can take you or leave.
so to let you know when I look in your eyes, you're letting me know. Let me know if the love is really real, but it seems to me that I'm wrapped up in love. Don't you know that I'm still in love, sure up in love with you,
Carina, get where you've been so long. Carina, Carina, get where you've been so long. I've been worried about you, baby. Baby, please come home. I got a bird that whistles, I got a bird that sings, I got a bird that whistles, I got a bird that sings, but I ain't got Carina, life don't mean a thing. Carina, Carina, girl, you're on my mind. Carina, Carina, girl, you're on my mind. I'm sitting down thinking of you, I just can't keep from crying.
Listening to K2 News in Juneau, Alaska. The time is 9:54, and we are currently waiting for the Juneau Assembly to come back out of executive session, and we will stand by here and put it back on the air as soon as that happens. Thank you.
Goodbye, Norma Jean, though I never knew at all, I had the grace to hold you safe, those around you crawled out of the woodwork, and they whispered into your brain, they said you are the treadmill, and they made you change your name. It seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. I would have liked to have known you, but I was just a key. Your candle burned out long before your legend ever did. Hollywood created a superstar, fame with a prize to pay. Even when you die, oh, the press still hounded you. All the papers had to say was that Marilyn was found in the news. Seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. Would you like to know you, but I was just a key. Your candle burned out long before your legend ever did.
I love you. days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. 'Cause when life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door. Think this through with me. Let me know your mind. Whoa, oh, what I want to know is, are you kind? It's a buck dancer's choice, my friends. Better take my advice. You know all the rules by now and the fire from the ice. Will you come with me? Won't you come with me? Whoa, oh, what I want to know, oh, will you come with me? God damn, will I be glad? Have you seen the light? Their walls are built of cannonballs. Their motto is, don't tread on me. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come with me or go alone. He's come to take his children home.
The time is 10:03, and you are currently listening to K2 News and waiting for the executive session of the Juneau Assembly to come back in from session and to conclude the meeting. And we'll stand by here. There's pretty much rain all week, highs about 37 and lows in the low 30s.
In a silver mine, and I call it Beggar's Tomb. I got me a violin, and I beg you, call the tune. Anybody's choice, I can hear your voice. Whoa, oh, what I want to know. Uncle John's band by the riverside. Got some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come on along or go alone. He's come to take his children home.
There is no place open.
It makes for a long work day.
Just
always picking up.
And in just a moment, we will be joining the assembly meeting again for the conclusion.
An executive session to conclude our decision-making process with regard to the selection of a successor to Mr. Swope. I call on Deputy Mayor Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the assembly appoint Ms. Kimberly Kiefer as the successor to Mr. Swope as city manager.
Madam Clerk, if you'd call the roll, please.
Mr. Stone?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Given the economic and demographic challenges this community faces, the compressed selection process that we use, and the fact that we do not have a plan to deal with the budget deficit, I'm not able to support this nomination.
Record is no.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mr. Dipto?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mayor Botello?
Yes.
Motion carries.
The Assembly has also determined to set Ms. Kiefer's compensation initially at $145,000 annually. Is there any further business to come before the body? Hearing none, we are adjourned.
And that concludes the Juneau Assembly meeting for tonight. Coming up, we will be joining In Progress as it happens, and then coming up at 11 o'clock, BBC World Service. You're listening to K2 News in Juneau, Alaska. The time is 10:08. And my name is Martha Moore, your host for this evening. Thanks for listening, and have a good, nice evening.